This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Democratic presidential contenders wrapped up their ninth debate Wednesday with former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg on stage with his rivals for the first time. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg entered the debate fresh off performances in Iowa and New Hampshire, the first two states to make their selections in the nominating process. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar was looking to ride momentum from a surprise third-place finish in New Hampshire into the debate in Saturday's caucus in Nevada. And among the candidates for whom the debates in Saturday's voting are a chance to break through and recapture the support that made them strong contenders in earlier national polls are former Vice President Joe Biden and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. President Trump, as he did in Iowa and New Hampshire, staged a counter-rally to the Democrats, AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
At the same time, six Democrats who want his job are debating in Las Vegas. President Trump was rallying with supporters in Phoenix.
November 3rd, get ready, November 3rd, we're coming.
Trump touted his economic numbers and complained he is being mistreated in the polling.
If I was treated fairly, meaning if you were treated fairly by the fake news, we'd be up 20 points higher in the polls. There wouldn't even be a competitive election.
Trump has been staying at his hotel in Las Vegas, making day trips to fundraisers in California and the rally in Phoenix. On Thursday, he campaigns in Colorado for Senator Cory Gardner. I'm Tim McGuire.
In Japan, it's reporting that two passengers on board a quarantine ship have died from the coronavirus. Hundreds of passengers have begun leaving the cruise ship in an attempt to curb the spread. Meanwhile, the total death toll has climbed to more than 2,100, with more than 75,000 people infected. This is VOA News. China has revoked the press credentials of three journalists with the U.S.-based Wall Street Journal newspaper over a recent editorial headline the government deemed racist. Foreign Ministry spokesman told reporters in Beijing Wednesday that the paper refused to apologize for the editorial in its February 3rd edition titled China is the Real Sick Man of Asia. The editorial, written by an American academic Walter Russell Mead, criticized China's response to the outbreak of the new coronavirus that killed more than 2,100 people on the mainland since it began 2 months ago. Tens of thousands of people, both in China and several other countries, have also been infected. The phrase sick man of Asia has been historically used to stereotype Chinese people as disease-ridden and unclean. The headline, however, was written by someone on the editorial staff, not Mead nor the reporters. A lawyer says in a British court that Julian Assange was offered a pardon by the Trump administration if he cleared Russia of involvement in Democratic National Committee email leaks in 2016. AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
A lawyer representing WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange told a British court Wednesday Assange was offered a pardon by the Trump administration if he agreed to say Russia was not involved in leaking Democratic National Committee emails during the 2016 U.S. election. The White House was quick to issue a denial. White House Press Secretary Stephanie Grisham said this is absolutely and completely false. At a preliminary hearing in London, lawyer Edward Fitzgerald said then Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher made the offer to Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy in London in 2017. Assange is fighting extradition to the United States on spying charges. I'm Mike Gracia.
Some insiders in the intelligence community are expressing concerns over President Trump's announcement that a U.S. ambassador with no background in intelligence is about to take the reins of the nation's top spy agencies. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
President Trump made the announcement on Twitter that he selected U.S. Ambassador to Germany, Richard Grenell, to serve as the next acting director of national intelligence. Some members of Congress cite Grenell's lack of experience in intel as a problem. A former National Security Agency attorney, Susan Hennessy, now at Brookings Institution, tweeted, quote, "This should frighten you. Not just brazen politicization of intelligence, but also someone who is utterly incompetent in an important security role." She adds, "The guardrails are gone." Grenell follows acting director Joseph McGuire, who served since August. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
There is more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Togolese government says it is ready for Saturday's presidential election, even as it bars some local observers from monitoring the polls.
The elementary requirement for an observation mission is independence and neutrality. If you don't have those requirements, also, there's no use to pretend to be an electoral observation mission.
Gilbert Bawara is Togo's Minister for Public Administration. Malawi's parliament passes two key electoral reform motions. We'll have an update on Guinea-Bissau's electoral crisis. And Libya's UN-backed government says it has suspended talks with General Khalifa Haftar's forces.
The shelling attack on a cargo ship in Tripoli harbor by Libyan forces under Eastern Commander General Khalifa Haftar Tuesday appears to have dealt a setback to UN-sponsored talks in Geneva.
That's correspondent Edward Urania in Cairo. Uganda says exporting maize grain to Zimbabwe is a win-win situation, and an unidentified Zimbabwean woman has been admitted to a hospital in Harare after showing symptoms of the coronavirus. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Togolese government says all is ready for Saturday's presidential election, even as it bars some local observers from monitoring the polls. Togo's Elections Commission said Wednesday that it has cancelled the accreditation of the National Consultation of Civil Society of Togo and its 500 observers from monitoring Saturday's vote. The commission has also blocked monitors from the Catholic Church. Gilbert Bawara, Togo's Minister for Public Administration, says the two organizations are not neutral. President Faure Gnassingbé, who is seeking another term, is being challenged by opposition coalition candidate and former Prime Minister Abayomi Kojo. Information Minister Bawara says all has been put in place to make Saturday's election transparent and peaceful.
The campaign and the whole preparations are proceeding very peacefully and safely. The campaign will be closing by tomorrow, Friday. So we hope the whole process, including the election day by Saturday, will go also very peacefully and very safely. And all the requirements for the credibility and the transparency of the presidential election has been put in place. So we are very optimistic, and we hope the whole process will end in a very good note.
So how do you think your candidate, President Faure Gnassingbé, how you see doing? Do you think he's going to be re-elected?
Yes, yes, yes. When you see the gathering, the population that attended his meetings all over the country, from the north to the south, from the east to the west, and the level of determination and commitment by the people that support him, there's no doubt that on the 22nd of February, he will be re-elected.
We hear that the Elections Commission says that the National Consultation of Civil Society of Togo and also the Catholic Church cannot observe the election. Is that true?
I think the elementary requirement for an observation mission is independence and neutrality. If you don't have those requirements, also, there's no use to pretend to be an electoral observation mission.
When you say they are not independent, what do you mean?
So I think when you take side in the political debate by giving the impression that you are supporting one of the contendants, therefore you are no more neutral and independent. That is what happened with the Catholic Church, and this is also what happened with the coordination of the civil society.
Gilbert, what about the Togolese diaspora? I think we spoke the last time, maybe last year, that the government was making arrangements for Togolese diaspora to register and to vote in this election. Will they be able to vote?
Definitely, they will be able to vote, but we regret that most of them have not been prepared to have the necessary requirement for them to be registered. But anyhow, we will draw lessons from the situation and see how we can improve their participation in the next elections in Togo.
It seems that the government has made it difficult for the diaspora to have the necessary preparation, because what we understand is that the government is demanding a valid Togolese passport and a state-issued ID card that they should register with the embassy of Togo. Some of these people have been here, let's say, for example, in the United States for 15, 20 years or so. Where are they getting the valid passport?
How do you prove that you are a Togolese if you cannot have the identity card or you don't have the passport? How can you prove that you are not a Togolese residing in Togo but visiting the United States or visiting France, the Germany? If you don't have the passport or you don't have the identity card, how do you prove that you are established in the United Nations, United States, if you don't have a document from the embassy? So this is the problem of the Togolese who have been talking and demonstrating here and there, but without preparing themselves to be able to participate effectively if there was the possibility offered to them. So this is not the fault of the government, but the fault of those Togolese. Anyhow, as I told you, we will draw some lessons from that situation and see how we can improve it.
Gilbert, thank you very much again. We look forward to speaking with you again, probably on Saturday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, my brother.
Gilbert Bawara is Togo's Minister for Public Administration. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lome. Malawi's parliament on Wednesday adopted two motions to amend the Electoral Commission Act and the Parliamentary and Presidential Election Act. The move is part of electoral reforms recommended by the Constitutional Court in its February 3rd ruling nullifying the May 2019 presidential election results. Rafik Hajjat is executive director of the Institute for Policy Interaction in Malawi.
The electoral reform bill was tabled and the 50+1 majority stipulation has been passed. In addition, the amendment of the Electoral Commission bill to change the composition of the Electoral Commission so that they're no longer appointed by the president, but more by the Public Appointments Committee of Parliament.
So in reality, this was a victory for the civil society groups that have been protesting or demanding electoral reforms.
Yes, it was a victory for those groups, and it was a victory for the people of Malawi, really. It's a victory for democracy.
The ruling DPP has challenged the court ruling. They have members in parliament. I mean, did they also vote for this 50+1 or what?
No, the vote was quite close. I think it was 96 or so in favor, 84 was against, and there were about 50 abstentions.
What happened in Parliament on Wednesday? How much impact will they have on this challenge or this appeal that has been launched by the ruling DPP and President Mutharika?
It will have a profound impact on the whole electoral system in Malawi. So whatever happens at the Supreme Court is not going to change this. I think the issue at the Supreme Court is the order for a rerun. And the rerun will take place in roughly about 4 months from now, 4.5 months, if all goes well. So the impact can be quite profound quite soon. If the appeal is upheld and the rerun doesn't take place, the next election that takes place will be a very, very different election in 2024.
But let's assume that the court order election, which is supposed to take place, I think it's July 2nd, is going to go ahead. Lately, some of the political party leaders, I had a talk the other day on my program with Atupile Mulusi, and they are talking alliances now. How does that play in?
Well, alliances and coalitions are a normal feature of multi-party democracy. It's not new in Malawi. In the past, we had the Ngwirizano coalition, which was an alliance of the MCP and a whole host of smaller parties. So I think all the parties are jockeying for positions, especially with the 50+1 stipulation. They can no longer rely on a mere plurality of votes. They will need an absolute majority, which is 50+1. So obviously people are marshalling their forces together.
When the parliament talked about the composition of the Malawi Electoral Commission, what does that do with, say, the current chair, Jean Ansa? I know she has refused to step down. Protesters have demanded her resignation. Does she stay on?
Oh, she will have to step down. There will be a new electoral commission. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Stay well.
Rafiq Hajat is Executive Director of the Institute for Policy Interaction in Malawi. You're speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 20th. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Guinea-Bissau Supreme Court late last week asked the National Electoral Commission to once again conduct a national accounting of the votes from the December presidential election. Amadou Djamaka is Executive Secretary of the Guinea-Bissau Observatory of Democracy and Governance. He tells Ricky Schreier that the commission has already done the national accounting, but the losing party, the PAIGC, keeps contesting the results.
That was the exceptional request that ECOWAS has made. And it was done and they did it.
Are tensions rising in the capital? And if so, how? Can you explain?
Tensions in the capital. So everything seems silent, seems quiet. But the thing is, there is nothing good coming to this silence. Because so the major party of Guineans are concluding now that the Supreme Court is playing with people, because we all know our laws, we know our constitution very well, and we know our electoral law. The Supreme Court cannot decide twice about same issue or on same issue, just once, and it's decided in January. And the National Commission of Election respected and did everything that they asked for. And again, repeated. So now I think the ECOWAS must act, and because this last decision has made. So the thing is, no one is ready to lose. As I said before, it's going to change the results. So this is just a protest to the delay the Sisoko investitures.
President-elect Mbalo has been traveling a lot. Are these visits official state visits, or are they, you know, who is paying for them? Do we know? Who are they sanctioned by? It's kind of interesting for a president-elect to make so many international visits so quickly.
I want to know too, but the truth is, he's traveling as an elected president, but with his own cost. He and his friends, as he always said, that they are helping him, they are supporting him in his travels. So there is no state costs. He has friends, you know. He has friends. So I think he's supported by his friends. The information that I have is this, because as you know, I am the head of Observatory of Democracy and Governance. I'm fighter of corruption, and we know the play traveling costs too much, but he has his contacts, he has his friends, and I think he is capable of dealing with the costs.
Amadou Djamaka is Executive Secretary for the Guinea-Bissau Observatory of Democracy and Governance. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bissau. Libya's Tripoli-based UN-backed National Unity Government says it is suspending talks with forces under the command of General Khalifa Haftar following an attack by his forces on the port of Tripoli on Tuesday, which targeted a ship reportedly carrying weapons from Turkey. Edwin Urania reports. For VOA from Cairo.
The shelling attack on a cargo ship in Tripoli Harbor by Libyan forces under Eastern Commander General Khalifa Haftar Tuesday appears to have dealt a setback to UN-sponsored talks in Geneva after members of the Tripoli-based Governing Council said they would no longer meet Haftar's representatives. Rival Libyan governments disputed the details of the attack on the Lebanese ship, which forces under Haftar claim was carrying weapons from Turkey. Sources in Tripoli dispute the claim and accuse Haftar of killing several civilians in the attack. Haftar's forces deny the allegation. Haftar met with Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu in Moscow Wednesday to discuss the latest developments in Tripoli after meeting with the top U.S. diplomat in Libya at Haftar's headquarters in the eastern Libyan town of Rajma on Tuesday. The Speaker of Libya's House of Representatives, Akila Saleh, put forth a 12-point plan to resolve the Libyan conflict Wednesday, according to Arab media. The plan calls for the disarming of militias in the capital, Tripoli, and authorizes Haftar's forces to carry out the disarming. The plan is unlikely to be welcomed by the Tripoli-based unity government. The United Nations Libya envoy, Ghassan Salami, is calling for a ceasefire between the warring parties that will be transformed into a permanent agreement. The European Union says that it would be willing to monitor the ceasefire and arms embargo on the rival parties. The EU offer is unlikely to be accepted by Haftar, who says his forces' goal is to capture all of Libya, including the capital. In Ankara, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan insisted that the EU has no authority to make any decisions regarding Libya and went on to say that Turkey would continue to support the Tripoli-based government of Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj.
Libya'ya ayak basmasıyla birlikte darbeci Hafter'in ilerleyişi zaten durmuştur.
He says that Ankara will continue to support the legitimate government in Tripoli against Haftar, whom he claims is trying to carry out a coup. Erdogan also says that Turkey is gradually strengthening its position in the region, alluding to an agreement over maritime borders with the Tripoli government that is disputed by regional states, including Greece, Egypt, and Cyprus. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Uganda says it sees exporting maize grain to Zimbabwe as a win-win situation, reducing food shortages in its neighbor while benefiting farmers at home. Bright Ramirama, Uganda's Minister of State for Agriculture, says businessmen are already mobilizing shipments at the request of the Zimbabwe government. Mugumi Davis Rakarinji reports from Kampala.
Ramirama says Zimbabwe contacted Uganda asking for maize supplies. He says the government is mobilizing merchants to organize enough grain to meet the request.
The COMESA is all about this. We should really trade among ourselves, even if we may not have too much. But if we can give half of what they need, it's okay. So the engagement is proper and within the framework of COMESA. We have grain companies, they have already been contacted. This is not the first time we are doing so. We did it to Kenya. We always do it.
The World Food Program has warned that Zimbabweans face a food crisis from prolonged drought and rising inflation. The agency says countries in sub-Saharan Africa, including Zimbabwe, South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and the Central Sahel region, all need immediate attention. Zimbabwe in particular faces overheating, with temperatures rising to 40 degrees Celsius, making it impossible for food production, according to a WFP report released earlier this year. Consequently, the report details at least 7.7 million people, or half the country's population, will face food insecurity at the peak of the lean season. The request comes at a time that Uganda is grappling with invading locust swarms. But officials have said food supplies aren't affected since the insects arrived after harvest. Ruamirama says the move will highly benefit local farmers.
The request by Zimbabwe to buy maize from Uganda is heresy. And here we do business, we do farming as a business. So if our farmers can sell maize to Zimbabwe, good. If we can sell maize to anywhere, is good. And the issue of quantities is really not a serious matter. Whatever quantities we can raise, whatever quantities our farmers can generate, if they can be sold off, good news for Uganda.
Antonio Querido, the head of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization in Uganda, called it a step in the right direction.
We need to promote more this commercialization among ourselves. As you know, this is the food basket of this region, and the potential is there. The soil are fertile. The water is here. So this creates more incentive for our farmers to do more.
The grains are expected to start being transported to Zimbabwe by road in the coming days. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
An unidentified 27-year-old Zimbabwean woman who works in Wuhan City in China has been admitted to an infectious hospital in Harare for monitoring after showing symptoms of the coronavirus. Harare City Council Director of Health Services, Dr. Prosper Chanzi, says the woman was part of a group of people who arrived in Zimbabwe 2 days ago from China, where at least 2,000 people have died and more than 74,000 are infected by the disease. Dr. Chanzi says a technical team is expected to deliberate on the status of the woman today, Thursday, while also making a follow-up on some of the people who were on the same flight with the lady.
The indications at the airport from the Port Health Officer was that she had the temperature, and once she had the temperature, it then meets the case definition of a suspected case. Positive history of travel from a reporting area or a reporting country, plus one or two symptoms. So she met that criteria. So we had to pick her up from the airport and take it to your isolation facility at the working hospital in Harare. On arrival at the hospital, she was stable. Temperature was normal, no symptoms, no respiratory distress, nothing. She was actually normal, though it stressed up, I think, because of all these things that had been happening when she was coming. We kept her overnight. We still have her admitted at the hospital. Just done today on PCR, we're negative. I hope that will be reported. The other tests were negative. Maybe there will be need for confirmatory tests also, but the tests in China, our tests here, have been negative for coronavirus.
So what does that mean? Are you going to keep her there?
For us right now, there is no reason for us to keep her under quarantine. But we will meet as a technical working group. We have a group of specialists that are just there to look at all the developments from the time she left China to the time that she spent in our hospital. And then we'll come up with a determination tomorrow morning.
So we cannot yet say that you are going to release the patient?
This is after a group of technical experts then give their recommendation. In the morning, she'll be out by 10 o'clock in the morning.
Are you saying she'll be out?
No. The recommendations will be out by 10 o'clock in the morning. We will have made a determination by then.
Dr. Prosper Chanzi is the Harare City Council Health Director. He was speaking to Gabe Dube of the Zimbabwe Service. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. At least 10 Somali government soldiers and 16 militants were killed Wednesday when Islamist group Al-Shabaab attacked two military bases in Somalia's Lower Shabelle region. The first attack started when the militants used an explosive-laden vehicle driven by a suicide bomber to target a military base run by local militia allied with the Somali federal government. According to multiple reliable sources in the town, at least 10 militants and 6 fighters belonging to the pro-government militia were killed during the battle. The cabinet of South Sudan's president, Salva Kiir, has endorsed his decision to return the country to a system of 10 states with the addition of 3 administrative areas ahead of Saturday's deadline to form a transitional government. Kiir bowed to pressure from opposition parties last weekend and scrapped a 32-state system that he established unilaterally during the South Sudan civil war. And the Togolese government says all is ready for Saturday's presidential election, even as it barred some local observers from monitoring the polls. Togo's Election Commission said Wednesday that it has cancelled the accreditation of the National Consultation of Civil Society of Togo and its 500 observers from monitoring Saturday's vote. And that is it for this Thursday, February 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, everyone. The best of best is still yet to be heard. Don't forget to tune in on Thursday, February the 20th for the Billboard's 10 Best Songs of 2019. You'll get to hear your favorite artist, Billie Eilish, Jonas Brothers, I'm a sucker for you, Lizzo, tune in only on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has always formed bridges between the U.S. and Africa. A number of African leaders were educated in America. The education bond between the U.S. and the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.